The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Unfortunately, we have no sponsors for this month's program, but that's okay. If you have any questions or would like to become a sponsor, please contact our office at 919-832-5138. Okay, let's start off with a little humor. Humor in uniform. While serving in Vietnam, my friend and his buddies were hunkered down in a mud-filled hole that had been dug into the side of a berm and covered with lumber for protection. Their one extravagance, a bare light bulb that hung from the ceiling. One guy was reading a newspaper article from back home about a congressional investigation into why some troops are living in relative luxury. The guy put down the paper, turned to my friend, and said, "Well, there goes the light bulb." As A.J. and his platoon of recruits were marching, their sergeant slipped and tumbled down into a ravine. The irate sergeant scrambled back up amid guffaws and barked. "Those who laughed, get down and give me 20. A.J. and some of others fell into the ground quickly and did their push-ups. Meanwhile, the sergeant glared at the others. "As for the rest of you, get down and give me 40 for lying." The Genius Section. Wish you were more creative? Just pretend. Thinking you aren't gifted may be what's blocking your inner artist. I want to ask you a favor. I have a pair of pants. Tell me, how many different ways can I put a pair of pants to use? Now imagine you're an architect. Same question. Now imagine you're your share. Bill Gates. A scuba diver. A medieval knight. You still have the pants. What alternative uses do come to mind? What you've just practiced, the conscious act of wearing another self, is an exercise that, according to psychiatrist Sereni Pillay, M.D., is essential to being creative. One great irony about our collective obsessiveness with creativity is that we tend to frame it with uncreative ways. That is to say, most of us marry creativity to our concept of self. Either we're creative or we aren't, without much of a middle ground. "I'm just not a creative person," a frustrated student might say in art class, while another might blame her talent at painting for her difficulties in math, deflecting with a comment such as, "I'm very right-brained." Dr. Pillay, a tech entrepreneur and an assistant professor at Harvard University, has spent a good chunk of his career subverting those ideas. He believes that the key to unlocking your creative potential is to defy the cliched advice that urges you to believe in yourself. In fact, you should do the opposite. Believe you are someone else. Dr. Pillay points out a 2016 study demonstrating the impact of stereotypes on one's behavior. The authors, educational psychologists Dennis Dumas and Kevin Dunbar, divided their college student subjects into three groups, instructing the members of one to think of themselves as eccentric poets, and the members of another to imagine they were rigid librarians. The third group was the control. The researchers then presented all the participants with 10 ordinary objects, including a fork, a carrot, and a pair of pants, and asked them to come up with as many different possible uses as possible for each one. Those who were asked to imagine themselves as eccentric poets came up with the widest range of ideas, whereas those in the rigid librarian group had the fewest. Meanwhile, the researchers found only a small difference in students' creativity levels across academic majors. In fact, the physics majors inhabiting the personas of the eccentric poets came up with more ideas than the art majors did. "These results," writes Dumas and Dunbar, "suggest that creativity is not an individual trait, but a malleable product of context and perspective. Everyone can be creative as long as he or she feels like a creative person." Dr. Pillay's work takes this step further. He argues that simply identifying yourself as creative is less powerful than taking the bold, creative steps of imagining you are somebody else. This exercise, which he calls psychological Halloweenism, refers to the conscious action of inhabiting another persona. An actor may employ this technique to get into character, but anyone can use it. According to Dr. Pillay, it works because it's an act of conscious unfocus, a way of stimulating the default mode network, a collection of brain regions that spring into action when you're not focused on a specific task or thought. The default mode network may be quiet, but it's hardly idle. It spends all day rummaging through our memories and collaging ideas together. Unfortunately, those ideas often get drowned out because most of us spend way too much worrying about the two things in particular, how successful slash unsuccessful we are, and how little we're focusing on the task at hand. These twin worries feed on each other. An unfocused person is an unsuccessful one, we believe. So we don't allow our minds to wander into its quietly fertile fields. Instead, we buy noise-canceling headphones, knuckle down, and berate ourselves for taking breaks. What makes Dr. Pillay's argument resonate is its healthy, forgiving realism. According to him, most people spend nearly half of their days in a state of unfocus. This doesn't make us slackers, it makes us human. The quiet, revolutionary idea behind psychological Halloweenism is, what if we stop judging ourselves for our mental downtime and instead started harnessing it? Putting this new spin on daydreaming means tackling two problems at once. You're making yourself more creative, and you're giving yourself permission to do something you'd otherwise feel guilty about. Imagining yourself a new situation or an entirely new identity never felt so productive. Okay, let's do some word power games. The editors at Merriam-Webster added a whopping 850 words and definitions to the dictionary in 2018, including appropriately wordy, lover of words. Quiz yourself on these other newcomers, then look up the answers on page 130, which I have right here. Good one, Homer. Among the Merriam-Webster's new word is embriggen, to enlarge. It was coined as a joke by the writers of The Simpsons, who had challenged themselves to invent two words that sounded real. The Springfield town motto is, a noble spirit embiggens the smallest man. The other invented words was cromulent, acceptable, which has not had a life beyond the cartoon show so far. Okay, let's do the words. Life hack. Does it mean identity theft, short bio, or clever tip? Life hack. It's a clever tip. Here's a simple life hack. Use dental floss to neatly slice up a cake. Chiweenie. That's C-H-I-H-C-H-I-W-E-E-N-I-E. Is that a chewy noodle, a chihuahua dachshund mixin, or crybaby? It's a chihuahua dachshund hybrid. My kids like Yorkie poos, but I'm partial of Chiweenies. Demonium. An impish child, a floor model, a name for an inhabitant. A demonian is a name for an inhabitant. As a Cleveland native, Jose prefers the demonium Buckeye over Ohioan. Harissa. Spicy sauce, hair dye, or brash women. It's a spicy sauce. After one diet of Marissa's lemon harissa chicken, my mouth was on fire. Cryptocurrency. Classified information. Digital money. Unpredictable events. It's digital money. I don't trust these cryptocurrencies fads. I'd rather write a check than pay with Bitcoin. Beach cruiser. An amateur server, a bike with wide tires, or migrating sunward. It's a bike with wide tires. Did you hear that Bryce started a business renting beach cruisers to tourists? A wonderwort. Daydreamer. Tofu sausage. Far-traveling word. It's a far-traveling word. The word orange is a classic. Wonderwort with roots in Sanskrit, Persian, and Arabic. Dumpster fire. Total disaster. Mass layoff. Rumor monger. It's a total disaster. Today was such a dumpster fire. I lost my wallet, I fought with my wife, and got into a fender bender, Jess moaned. Poke, P-O-K-E, raw fish salad, online pest, or rural town. It's a raw fish salad. With tzatziki, acai, and poke on this menu, I need a translator to order. A silver alert, warning of a missing senior, notice of a price drop, ship's distress signal. It's a warning of a missing senior. No need for a silver alert. We found Grandpa tinkering in the attic. Kombucha. Fermented tea. Modular furniture. Gorilla species. Kombucha is fermented tea. The new health food store sells kombucha by the gallon. Mansplain. Mansplain. Mooch off a friend. Brag about money. Explain condescending. Mansplain is explaining condescendingly. Ryan managed to mansplain about film history to his date, though she had a Ph.D. in the subject. Oh, that was a nice one. Piloerection, a demolished building, a bristling of hairs, or a new website. It's a bristling of hairs. I dare you to read Stephen King's book without some serious piloerection. Gastroplasty. Culinary customs, stomach surgery, horrible crime. Gastroplasty is stomach surgery. Gastroplasty can help some people lose weight, but it isn't right for everyone, cautioned Dr. Willis. Cotija. Hard Mexican cheese, ballroom dance, or poisonous snake. It's a hard Mexican cheese. Cotija is often described as a cross between feta and Parmesan. And now let's go to a letter from the editor. The Miracle of Memory. As I hang the first ornament, I'm singing along with Eartha Kitt. I know I look like a fool in my Santa hat, belting out Santa Baby, but it's a Sunday before Christmas, tree dressing day. I've chosen the towering Bavarian stick skier in a red quilted jacket that my dad loved. Not right in front, it's dorky, Rachel protests. She is a grown working nurse, but revisiting the oh my god, dad of role of youth. When I was a kid, my mother had the Christmas tree bug, and I've taken same silly joy in the ritual. I remember her holiday jazz albums, Jimmy Smith, Stan Getz, dropping from the stack onto the turntable as my two older brothers and I danced, quibbled, and dressed the tree. So I string the lights, build the fire, then let each ornament trigger smack talk and memories. The ugly glass owl, a memorial to Neil's obsessive hunting for owl pellets when he was a kid. I was a freaking Steve Irwin, he deadpans. The handmade sleeping kitty with a crack across it. My sweet mother-in-law, Ruth, glazed at in honor of our first cat. Only the ornament remains, glued and proud. Each object fills me with emotions I can't otherwise tap. Our dear friends, the Nashes, sent the Johnny mini cowboy boot after they moved from us to Texas. The tiny San Francisco Giants baseball in a glass brings back the incredible day in 2010 when we all finally celebrated for real. Bent, awkward, or old ornaments join the pretty bulbs up front. We sing along with Luther Vandross, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and I feel all the people and places life has lucked me with. Bruce Kelly, Editor-in-Chief. Letters from the Editor. I'm sorry, letters from readers. Old-time doctor remedies that work. I can't treat eye strain by placing cucumber slices on my eyelids and become allergic to cucumbers. I tried to achieve similar results by closing my eyes for 15 minutes, but I failed since I couldn't resist reading the rest of your fine magazine. However, I still wonder whether the secret to avoiding eye strain is simply to close your eyes once in a while. Marco Raphael West, Laurel, Maryland. We encourage people to use aloe vera for burns, but you failed to mention that bottled aloe vera products may actually contain very little aloe vera. The most reliable source is the real plant. Everyone should have one on their windowsill. TB via email. How to conquer panic attacks. I had panic attacks for 28 years. Took every prescription drug in the book, meditated, exercised, etc. 3 years ago, I went on a vegan diet, but continued to eat seafood because my nutrition advised against quitting meat cold turkey. In 4 months, my panic attacks were gone. I have not had one since. Janie Sabins, Maplewood, New Jersey. Learn not to fall. I would add, do not wear backless shoes. Twice, more than 30 years apart, I had falls from wearing backless shoes. That last one led to a broken arm and the inability to do some ordinary things for myself. There is also a psychological component to a serious fall. Alice Marcus Solovoy, Highland Park, Illinois. Sympathy for my bully. I was bullied from 6th to 8th grade. When I complained to my vice principal, she told me she didn't believe the young man would do such things. I recently learned that after being in and out of jail, my bully passed away of an overdose at 30 years old. I can't help but wonder, what if my report had been respected? Might it have opened a dialogue that would have helped him? As the author says, look at every bully and his or her victim, and you'll often find two kids who need help, not just one. Aleka Stephanopoulos, Munster, Indiana. Scout's Honor. I work for the Boy Scouts in Tennessee and enjoy the article about the man who went to Camp Mimsy to see whether he had what it takes to be a scout. But I have a question about the boy who consumed 35 slushes in 7 days. Only 35? Joe Priester, Franklin, Tennessee. Word power. The pronunciation of the word bruschetta is incorrect. The letter SH should be pronounced SK, as in scheme, and not SH, as in she, so it's bruschetta. That's interesting. John Kellett, Los Orsos, California. From the editors, our go-to reverence, Merriam-Webster's Collegiate Dictionary, says that both pronunciations are correct, but SH is preferred. how to make it as a fossil. Harry R. Truman, the man who ran Spirit Lake Lodge at the foot of Mount St. Helens, refused to leave when the volcano erupted on May 18, 1980. It is presumed he is now under 200 feet of landslide debris, along with his 16 cats. Modern fossils in the making. Kirk Campbell, Corvallis, Oregon. Heaven can't wait. You'll be waiting a long time if you start looking for the next total lunar eclipse on January 20, 2019, as Joe Rao urged. In fact, it will appear the day after, on January 21st. Bill Schoenberg, Agawam, Massachusetts. According to meteorologist Joe Rao, who wrote the story, the eclipse starts on January 20th and finishes on January 21st. On the 20th, the moon will begin moving into the Earth's dark shadow, called the Umbria, at 10:33 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The total phase will begin at 11:41 p.m. and last for 62 minutes. The moon will move out of the Umbra on the early morning of the 21st at 1:50 a.m. Everyday Heroes. A 4-year-old boy discovers that compassion for the less fortunate can produce superhuman results. The Caped Crusader. And there's a picture of Austin modeling his costume, which was created for those times he works with the needy. And it's a young African-American boy, obviously 4 to 5 years old. He has on bright red socks, blue tennis shoes, blue basketball shorts, a blue T-shirt, and a red and blue cape, and a big smile. Austin Perrine is not your typical superhero. Oh, sure, he looks the part, with his signature cape flapping against his blue shirt. He has an arch nemesis, as all good heroes must. He even uses a catchy name for his heroic alter ego, President Austin. But two things set this Cape Crusader apart. His adversary is not confined to the pages of a comic book. President Austin's foes, hunger and homelessness, are all very real. Also, he's only 4 years old. Our hero's origin story started this past February in the Perrine family living room in Birmingham, Alabama. Austin and his father, T.J. Perrine, were watching a program on Animal Planet about a mother panther leaving her cubs. I told him that the cubs would be homeless for a while, T.J. says. Austin didn't know what homelessness meant, but he was sad and wanted to know more. Seeing this teachable moment, T.J. took Austin to the Firehouse Ministries, a local shelter that provides housing, food, and other services for chronically homeless men. As they drove by the red brick building, they saw a group of 25 homeless men standing on the street corner. "Dad, they look sad," Austin said. "Can we take them some food and make them smile?" That day, Austin used his allowance to buy each man a Burger King sandwich and handed the food out himself. Seeing what their present meant to the men at the ministry, Austin and T.J. returned the next week. Austin again dipped into his piggy bank to buy sandwiches, which he handed out along with his new catchphrase, "Don't forget to show love." After he returned every week for 5 weeks, word of Austin's act of kindness spread through social media and national news outlets. Burger King jumped aboard, agreeing to donate $1,000 a month for an entire year toward the cause. Soon, churches and shelter across the country began inviting Austin to come distribute food in other poverty-prone areas. He'll have visited at least 15 locations by the end of this year, including Skid Row in Los Angeles and parts of Puerto Rico affected by Hurricane Maria. Whereas before, Austin and TJ could feed 25 to 50 people at a time, now, thanks to corporate community support, they can feed 800 to 2,000 people at once. But Austin isn't just filling bellies. He's improving the lives of those he meets. On that first trip to Firehouse Ministry, T.J. and Austin talked to a man named Ramont, who was estranged from his family. The respect Austin bestowed on the 41-year-old Ramont touched the man, and he shared with T.J. just how grateful he was to be treated so considerately by a 4-year-old stranger. Ramont and T.J. kept in touch. With help from T.J.'s mother, Audrey Perron, who worked at the Alabama Department of Transportation at the time, T.J. helped Ramont collect all the credentials he needed to get a driver's license. The license helped Ramont get a job, and with money in the bank, he was able to rent his own apartment. All that was made possible because a little boy took the time to care. Austin's passion has now become his family's calling. After raising money through a GoFundMe page, Audrey established the Show Love Foundation, a nonprofit dedicated to fighting homelessness. She now serves as president, and T.J. left his job as a project manager for a hospital chain to oversee public relations for the foundation full-time. He's in talks with the city of Birmingham to secure the red brick building where it all started. Firehouse Ministries is moving, as a site of their own shelter, which would offer medical and mental health care as preventive steps against homelessness. As for President Austin, he continues to give out food, smiles, and his inspirational message of love. It makes me feel like I'm saving the day. A dog's best friend. And there's a picture of a guy on a bicycle with a dog spread across his back as he's riding along. Jarrett Little tried a few ways of carrying Columbo. This proves the easiest. It's like a fireman's carry almost. Jarrett Little was road testing his mountain bike out Columbus, Georgia, when his riding party, Chris Diston, stopped suddenly. Something in the distance, moving among the trees, had caught her attention. It turned out to be a sandy-colored, 5-month-old Great Dane mix. He was really thin, ribs showing, and had a lot of road rash and a broken leg, Little told CBS News. The cyclists fed the friendly pup and shared their water. They also quickly realized that the dog was coming with them, although they had no idea how. They were more than 7 miles from downtown and riding bikes. We couldn't leave him, Little told the Ledger Inquirer. Out here next to the Oxbow Meadows, he was going to end up as alligator food. Little, a 31-year-old brick and concrete business owner, had an idea. He carefully picked up his new friend and slipped the 38-pound dog's hind legs onto the back pockets of his cycling jersey. He then draped the dog's front paws over his shoulders. He was injured, so he wasn't trying to fight, Little says. He was also happy that we were there touching him and hadn't taken off on him. The trio's 30-minute ride into town ended at a bike store, where they got more water and food for the dog. That was when Andrea Shaw, a corporate attorney from Maine in town on business, happened by. The dog made a beeline for her, licking and loving on her, says Dixon. Shaw was smitten, and after Woodridge Pyre declared her intentions, I'm keeping this dog. Shaw called him Columbo after the town where they'd met and scheduled an operation on his leg. Today, Columbo is living the high life on a farm with a horse, a pony, a 6-year-old boy, and 2 coonhounds to keep him company. As Dixon told the Ledger Inquirer, he is literally the luckiest dog alive. I won the Chicken Wing Super Bowl by Molly Shore, age 39, Plumas Lake, California. You ate 47 pounds of chicken wings in 30 minutes to win the Wing Bowl 25. How do you train for that? The night before, the girls had a night out and we ate a lot of nachos. That morning, I drank at least 3 gallons of water to stretch my stomach. When did you realize you might be good at this? When it had been very first challenge, everybody took note of it. I kept saying, I just ate a hamburger, whatever. Do you compete often? 15 to 20 times a year. I won $22,000 at my first Wing Bowl. She has also competed with cinnamon rolls, bratwurst, pudding, and fried mushrooms, although not at the same time. But how do you still only weigh 127 pounds? Any professional eater will not eat like that at home. It's fruits and veggies in our house. How did you find this career? I had 4 small children. I was working at a bartender to be home during the day. But when I started doing this, I was making more money in minutes than I could make in a whole month. What do people say when you tell them what you do? People make fun of us sometimes, but competitive eating is a physical sport. If you overeat on Thanksgiving, you're doing the same thing we are, only we get paid. The Wing Bowl is held every year in Philadelphia, the Friday before Super Bowl. Schuyler has run the contest 3 times. Life in these United States. You could give me advice on what I need is herbal tea and lemon bars. There's a couple sitting there looking at a counter, and I'm not quite sure what the problem is. On the phone with my 93-year-old brother in Wisconsin, I told him I thought it was time he paid someone to shovel snow for him. He suddenly grew indignant. Why should I pay someone to shovel, he demanded. I can get my son to do it. He's only 70. Scene. A public bus in New York City. Bus driver. Everyone remember to keep your headphones plugged in. From the looks of all of you, I can already tell I hate your music taste. All I'm saying is we had a dungeon, my wife would decorate it with throw pillows. Before heading off to Mexico on vacation, my daughter asked her doctor for medicine to ward off any potential stomach troubles. Instead, the doctor prescribed bottled water and electrolytes, which have simple sugars and salt. My daughter liked that. Oh, she said, like a margarita. My 3-year-old son, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. Me, you can be anything you want. Son, after a few seconds, I think I'll be a mother. Maury Lowell, Chaska, Minnesota. Looking for a reason to chuckle? Three people share their wry stories. Today I met a girl named Unique, I said. She has an identical twin sister. No one thought it was funny. Today in Latin, my teacher was trying to figure out how many days were in July. I said 31. He asked whether I knew it from the rhyme or something. I said yes. The real reason I knew is because Harry Potter's birthday is July 31st. Today I was at the doctor's office. Because I'm a teenager, I was required to take a survey about drugs, alcohol, and sex, and asked whether I was in a gang. I wrote marching band. My big, fast shopping list. Ever go to Costco only to realize you need a moving van to bring your purchases home? The woman behind the Instagram account, I'm a mom of heart, I can't understand completely. This snapshot posted before a recent haul might make you feel better the next time you overdo it. My list. Wine. 50-pound bag of trail mix will never get eaten. Chicken. 6 packs of John Grisham books, just because. Box of chicken nuggets, 6 inches too wide, for my freezer. Big old bag of spinach that turns into green water. Extra TV. Wine with a handle on it. Chorizo sampled, but will never cook. So much chicken salad, so much. Tent. Bucket of pickles. Only thing under $10. Gross vitamins. Wine in a box. Magnum of Head and Shoulders for my babe. Quotable quotes. Discipline shows who you really are. To control yourself, that is the ultimate power. Kendrick Lamar, rapper. If somebody asks, what are you doing in 5 years, and you have an answer, I think there's a good chance you aren't going to get there. If you pick one thing, then you've neglected all the other opportunities. Dollar more, philanthropist. That's not my problem. It's possibly the worst thing people can think. Atul Gawande, surgeon. I have no social media. I don't need things in my life to distract me from my life. Paul Rudd, actor. If you can affect someone when they're young, you're in their hearts forever. Mara Wilson, actor. The speaker at my high school commencement concluded asking us whether or not we would explore and develop the spiritual part of our identity throughout our lives, or wait for illness or advancing age to force a crash course. Ultimately, I came to the conclusion that this is the most important question of all. Francis S. Collins, director of the National Institutes on Health. Mental toughness is the child's ability to see, is the ability to see the bright side of a hopeless situation. Adversity is an experience, not a final act. George Raveling, basketball coach. Nature is the biggest teacher. She's always teaching you how to adapt. Gisele Bündchen, supermodel. And a point to ponder. People don't come to rock shows to learn something. They come to be reminded of something they already know and feel deep down in their gut. It's the reason true rock and roll will never die. Bruce Springsteen, singer. And with that, we swing back over to Consumer Reports. And we're going to continue reading letters from the Consumer Reports. And these first bunch of letters are from their October story of What's Really in Your Meat. I read the first two letters last week. Investigated the presence of trace amounts of banned drugs in meat and a potential health implication. In your report, What's Really in Your Meat, I was intrigued but sorely disappointed. You mentioned something in the way of insufficient data that prevented naming the products with a higher content of drugs. And I can understand your discomfort. But you have made your discomfort ours. What I buy your magazine for is to determine what products, by brand name, are good, safe, and useful. You've provided a tantalizing glimpse into the bad practice in the meat industry, but you left your readers with woefully insufficient information about what brands are good or bad, as you customarily do. Your very insightful article, that's from Jay Potter, Slate Hill, New York. Your very insightful article reminds me of an incident when I was a child. I asked my beloved and very religious grandmother whether a certain, hang on a second here, having technical problems here, okay, the food item was kosher. She told me that you have to ask and it isn't. That apparently is your attitude about questionable substances in meat, if I cannot agree more. Eli Kaminsky. The article's titled What's Really in Your Meat and Hidden Health Risk from Heavy Metals exhibit the same flawed reasoning. Fact A. Certain drugs and heavy metals have been detected in foods at trace concentrations. Fact B, these drugs and heavy metals can be hazardous to humans at higher concentration. Implied conclusion C, these drugs and heavy metals pose threats to human health at the observed trace concentrations. Many substances that are normally present in food, water, or air would be harmful in high concentrations, but are harmless to humans in trace concentrations. The meat article doesn't present evidence of any risk of cancer or fetal harm from the low-level drug contaminations observed. Likewise, the heavy metal article never provides evidence for risk from heavy metals at the concentrations measured. For example, rice, despite its arsenic content, has been consumed daily by millions of people from infancy to old age without apparent adverse consequences. Edward P. Ewing, M.D., Atlanta. Editor's note. The government says none of the drugs CR focused on in our article are allowed in meat at any level. In some cases, that's because even trace amounts are linked to human harm. For example, chloraminophenicol is banned in food animals because its exposure can cause aplastic anemia in 1 in 10,000 people. And in cases where the risk of exposure is not yet clear, that's partly because little research has been done to investigate. That's why CR has called on the Department of Agriculture to study the potential long-term risk. And in our article of heavy metals, 15 of the 50 baby foods we tested pose a potential health risk, including developmental harm to a child who consumes just one serving or less per day. That assessment is based on our test results and comprehensive analysis of medical literature, as well as data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Consumer Reports continues to investigate this issue. Share your confidential news tips. As part of our investigative efforts, Consumer Reports is seeking information from government or industry insiders or consumer watchdogs related to drug, food, or product safety or digital privacy. To contact us, go to cr.org/newstips. If you can safely, securely, and anonymously communicate with us, send an encrypted email to tips@cro.consumer.org. By downloading a browser extension such as Virtue, a plug-in for Google Chrome that allows you to send encrypted emails. Note that you don't have to share your name, though your email address will appear in our inbox. Postal mail, you can send an anonymous letter or package to CR News Tips, Consumer Reports, 101 Truman Avenue, Yonkers, New York, 10703. Your article is informative as it was, there's many questions unanswered that I know CR will continue to delve into. As your previous article on the safety of shrimp has put trepidation into my visits to buffets, this recent one has put a similar fear into the most of what I eat. Keep up the good work. Bill Taglia, future vegetarian. Shopping for safety. I actually laughed out loud reading Kevin Doyle's sticker shock about a car trim level confusion. In the October 2018 issue, I purchased a 2018 Subaru Crosstrek mainly for the safety features. Of course, I had to get the limited trim. I couldn't agree more that safety features should be standard. John Peebles. This is the first time I've written to CR, but I just had to comment. Kevin Doyle not only provided us with the valuable car buying information, but he included humor that I've never seen before in the magazine. Well done, Terry Benson. I just finished reading Sticker Shock. I really wanted to purchase a 2018 Subaru Forester. However, after visiting a dealership, I was amazed at the cost of the Forester with the safety features I needed. So I purchased a 2018 RAV4 XLE with the same features I wanted at a much lower cost. I'm truly happy with my RAV4 and spent a few thousand dollars left. For Neil Smith. For decades, I had good outcomes in using CR in my selection of highly reliable vehicle. Kevin Doyle shares how challenging it can be lately to select a trim level. My most recent experience produced good results when I did a few test drives and then fine-tuned my choices. Then I used the buying service at my local credit union, which found the exact features I wanted at significant savings. They had it transported 200 miles to me at no added cost. Scott Smith, St. Louis Obispo, California. Protecting our privacy, making your home a little smarter, October 2018, is informative but leaves out some crucial information. What about security? How vulnerable is hacking? Is each device? What steps can consumers take to A, protect their home network from intrusion, and B, prevent unauthorized uses? Please publish a follow-up rating the devices by these criteria. I am reluctant to buy any smart home device without this information. W. Meacham, Austin, Texas. Editor's note. CR takes consumer data privacy and security very seriously, says Robert Richter, who heads up our privacy testing program. Last year, we unveiled the digital standard to provide a benchmark for how products could safeguard consumers' data, and we've already begun incorporating its principles into our testing program. Richter adds. Earlier this year, we published our first privacy and security results for smart televisions and peer-to-peer payment apps. We're working to expand that program across more categories. This requires establishing a new testing protocol so that meet the rigorous standards we use in other aspects of our testing. We will be keeping all of our members updated. Storm safety. In your article, Safety from the Storm, your sidebar about keeping important documents and cash in a go bag by the door is okay if you're home when the disaster happens. What to do if you're not? Most of us now always carry smartphones with lots of storage capacity. I suggest using your phone to photograph important documents or scanning and storing them digitally. The lesson in all of this, as I understand it, is to avoid building and zones highly susceptible to wildfires and flooding. That's why they're called flood zones. But if local authorities bending to local pressure allow development to proceed, then casualty insurance premiums should rise to the appropriate levels. I see no reason why my insurance in Minnesota should subsidize underpriced and inappropriate casualty insurance coverage for structures erected in high-hazard areas elsewhere. What we're testing in our labs. Single-wall ovens. We tested 29 electric models. We test for evenness of cookies and cakes baked in multiple racks, evenness of browning and searing a tray of burgers in the broiler, oven capacity, and more. About the scores. Median was 74, the range was 50 to 89. Best for baking, CE Cafe with French doors, $3,600. Yeah, I guess so. High owner satisfaction, KitchenAid at $2,300. And broiling bargain, Whirlpool at $900. Quiet vacuums. We tested 94 models. We test for noise levels, how much embedded talc and sand a model can lift from a medium pile carpet, handling, and more. About the scores, the canisters got 53, the median was 53, the range was 41 to 75. The upright, the median was 58, the range was 33 to 74. The bagless upright by Shark rotator powered lift-away speed, $260, got a 65. Bagged canister, meal complete, $650, got a 63 overall score. And the bagless canister, but Dyson Ball multi-floor, at $300, got a 51 oversized. Is there a downside to buying a full-size desktop instead of an all-in-one model? A full-size desktop computer, although bulkier than a sleek all-in-one model, can offer similar performance for less money, especially if you already own a monitor. If you do need to buy a new monitor, adding a few hundred dollars to your outlay, your total cost still may be lower for an equivalent all-in-one computer. Compare, say, the cost of the HP Pavilion model with the HP All-in-One. Just look for a resolution of at least 1920 by 1080, regardless of what screen size or brand you prefer, advises Antoinette Azzadelio, CR's lead computer tester. Full-size computers are also easier to upgrade and repair than all-in-one models. Still, for compactness and convenience, an all-in-one is hard to beat. Mirrorless cameras. We tested 50 models. They test for image quality on auto and manual modes, video quality in regular and low light, quality in a flash photos, LCD display quality, and ease of use, and more. About these scores, the median was 70, the range was 54 to 81. A superior snap from Fujifilm Pro X Pro 2 was $2,300, got an 81 overall score. Best for video and battery life, the Sony Alpha AR72R, $3,600, got an 80, and lightweight money saver was the Canon EOS M100 at score of 70 for $450. Chest freezers. We tested 22 models. We test for temperature uniformity, thermostat control, energy efficiency, usable capacity, and how well a model stays cold during a power outage. Median scores were 78, range was 14 to 91. The best and largest capacity was the GE FCM22DLWW, $765 at 91 score. Terrific for tight spaces was the Frigidaire FFFC05, $260 with an 82 overall score. And stone cold bargain was the Insignia NS, $170 for an 82 score as well. Car batteries. We tested 11 Group 65 models. We test for battery life, how long a battery endures repeated charges and discharges cycles, how long it can run a car, and more. The median score was 84, the range was 57 to 91. The best of the bunch was the Superstart Platinum AGM 65 LPT, 91 for $190. The long warranty was the 48-month for the Interstate MT7 65 at $280 with a 91 overall score. And the deal for warmer clients was Everstart Max 655 South, $95 and an 80 overall score. Desktop computers. We tested 39 models. We test for a desktop's performance, versatility, including hardware and software, ergonomics, quality of display, and more. All-in-one, median was 69, range was 35 to 93. Full-sized, median was 72, range was 68 to 87. A full-size desktop deal. Monitor not included was HP Pavilion at $750, got an 84. The most versatile all-in-one was the HP 34B at $2,000, also got an 81 score. And nicely priced all-in-one was the Lenovo 7305 241KB at $950, overall score of 74. Baby, it's cold out there. Can I get a remote starter for my car if I don't come with one? If your car was built after 2005, chances are good that you can buy a compatible remote starter that lets you start your car from a distance, thawing window ice and making the inside toasty warm. Your safest bet is to get a system from your car's manufacturer, says John Eberson, chief mechanic at CO's Auto Test Center. Your local dealer can usually provide one. Cars built before 2005 probably need an aftermarket starter, Eberson says. Have it professionally installed in a national chain or reputable local shop, and get some level of warranty on the work. Aftermarket remote starters usually cost $200 to $300, including parts and labor, but systems for European cars may cost up to $800. Aftermarket remote starters can be fitted to cars with manual transmissions, but CR advises against it. The car could potentially be started while left in gear instead of neutral, which is a safety hazard. Never remote start a car in an enclosed area such as a garage. Carbon monoxide poisoning is a deadly risk. How can I tell if my old incandescent string lights are safe to use this holiday? First, check that wiring in your incandescent string lights isn't broken or frayed, and is still flexible. Brittle exposed wire indicates that the set is past its prime and potentially unsafe to use, says John Banta, a CR test engineer. If the wire is pliable, plug it in a stand to test the bulbs. If a few bulbs are out and you have the original spares, it's safe to replace them. Properly working incandescents will feel warm, which is fine for your tree. But don't link too many strings together because that can cause a power overload. If you're replacing strings, choose LED lights. Even though LED lights might be more expensive, they last longer, can be brighter, and use less energy. Plus, LED bulbs are usually plastic, and therefore won't shatter like glass incandescent bulbs. Whether LED or incandescent, always look for the ULC, the standard for safety, on any box of lights you buy, and turn them off before you go to bed. One last safety tip. Between 2014 and 2017, 27% of emergency room visits were related to falling off a ladder while putting up holiday string lights. So exercise increased caution if you must string your lights high up, advises Don Huber, safety expert for CR. Are e-gift cards secure? Physical cards for specific merchants and services are widely available at stores. But before buying one, always inspect a card's protective stickers for coding for tampering, and check whether the PI has been revealed, says CR Money Editor Toby Stanger. Scammers can copy gift card codes while they're on the rack and later steal the funds you load on them. She says, some issuers will replace a lost or stolen gift card if proof of purchase and a card ID number are provided, so give the receipt along with the card. You can also offer reloadable PayPaid cards. These are attractive because you can use them whenever merchants take the debit cards of the issuer, such as American Express or Visa, Stanger says. If fraud occurs, many issuers limp your liability to $50 if you report the unauthorized use within 2 days. A few issuers won't make you pay anything. With e-gift cards, your recipient gets a redeemable code via email, text, or social media. The e-card may be printable or designed only for a smartphone. Some allow redemption only online, not in a physical location. Keep in mind that you typically supply a lot of identifiers for yourself and your recipient, though this makes it easier for e-gifts to be replaced. If, say, the recipient loses the redemption code, it's not without risk. Consumers are at the mercy of the companies they purchase their secure data from their data, says Shirley Ensco, a senior analyst at the Alt Group, financial research and consulting company. So alert the recipient ahead of time and concern that the e-gift arrived, and remind him to change passwords often to thwart fraudsters. In the know, food processors. A good food processor can speed up your prep time for almost any meal. You can use a processor to puree soups and sauces, whip up nut butters, and with some you can even make doughs, says CR test engineer Cindy Fisher. Even experienced home cooks, who often prefer to slice and dice by hand, still find plenty of uses for their food processors. Plus, they're an excellent tool when you need to prepare large batches of food for holiday guests. But the sheer variety of fancy features and high prices that come with these culinary appliances will give you lots to chew on. It's best to decide first on the size you want, Fisher advises, taking into account how many people you tend to cook for and what your storage and counter space can accommodate. Then evaluate the features you want, keeping in mind how often and how hard your food processor will be pressed into service. For example, if you like to make salsas, you might opt for a model that's great at chopping, perhaps with a wide feed tube, to give you the trouble of cutting up larger veggies. An excellent value is the Oster Pro 1200 Plus Food Processor Attachment for $90. Although small at only 5 cups, this is a sturdy pick with a great chopping and dicing features, as well as excellent grating. Plus, it comes with a very good blender attachment and costs hundreds less than some other models. Fit for foodies. For $400 is a 16-cup Breville Sous Chef BPFB 800. The Silent Slicer, the 12-cup Cuisinart Elite Collection at 2.0 at $200. And the Budget Blade Runner Hamilton Beach 10-cup with compact storage 770-60 at $50. Kitchen gift ideas for $50 and under. The Bella Pro Toaster at $50. This mighty mini toaster excelled in all of our tests, even offers a gluten-free setting to toast denser gluten-free breads at a lower temperature for longer. Hamilton Beach 12-cup programmable coffee maker, $25. A great idea for the coffee lover in your life. This reliable brewer is easy to use and takes cone-type filters. Plus, the warming plate will keep coffee hot for 2 hours after brewing. The Cuisinart Smart Stick CBS 75 Blender for $35. Excellent at pureeing vegetables for soup, this drawer-sized gadget is also very good at blending yogurt. The Smart Stick also comes with a 3-year warranty, better than most we tested. The Hamilton Beach 6-slice toaster oven for $50. Not only great for toast, this small appliance is also adept at reheating lasagna and baking muffins and cookies, all for hundreds less than many of the other toaster ovens recommended. It's only $50. The Black & Decker 3-in-1 Digital Power Crush Blender for $50. Affordable, durable, and compact, this 492-watt blender is a great gift for anyone who enjoys smoothies. It also comes with an 18-ounce personal blender attachment, which received an overall score of 80 in one of our tests. And the Cuisinart Mini Plus Plus Food Chopper. This petite 3-cup chopper combines good value and solid performance. It was particularly zippy at chopping onions and almonds in our test and at grating Parmesan cheese. It's only $40. And your microwave. How to clean practically everything. Your microwave. Most of us rely on our microwave oven daily, zapping everything from hot cocoa to last night's leftovers. So it's no surprise how quickly it can become dirty with splatter and food bits. But a deep clean every so often can keep your microwave humming and odor-free, especially around the holidays when it's likely to work overtime. To remove stains, wipe the inner walls, ceiling, and floor of the oven with a hot, damp cloth. Wash removable parts, such as the turntable, in a dishwasher, if it's safe, or with hot water and dishwashing liquid. For over-the-range units, be sure to wash the filters underneath. Chase away smells. To banish odors, place a bowl of water containing a quarter cup of lemon juice in the oven and run it on high for 1 to 2 minutes. Wait 30 seconds, then remove the bowl and wipe the cavity using the lemon water condensation to clean it. Then wipe it down with plain water and repeat if necessary. Scrape it clean. If you have stubborn stains and bits of food baked into the interior, try scraping them with a plastic credit card. but never used to scrape the inner surface of the microwave's window. A scratch there could damage the microwave blocking finish. Finish up by making the exterior oven shine. Simply use a mild all-purpose cleaner and a soft cloth. Still confused by smoke detectors? With several types to choose from, ionization, photoelectric, dual sensor, and more, shopping for smoke detectors isn't as straightforward as you might hope. Part of the reason is that fires can burn differently. Some flare, others smolder, and different types of smoke detectors are more sensitive to one type or the other. Unfortunately, not all detectors can adequately detect both fire types, so we recommend using either dual sensor smoke alarms or a combination of units to ensure the best protection. Dual sensor. These units, such as First Alert's 3120B that we recommend below, excels at detecting both the types of fire and are most effective smoke alarms in our tests. The type of ionization. This type of smoke detector is best at detecting the small particles of fast-flaming fires. It works by detecting charged smoke particles from the flame, which triggers the alarm. According to the National Fire Protection Association, NFPA, ionization smoke detectors are particularly sensitive to burnt food and steam. So to prevent false alarms, avoid mounting this type of detector near the kitchen or bathroom. But don't rely on these units alone. In our test, ionization detectors such as the KID were excellent at detecting flaring fires, but unable to detect smoking smoldering fires adequately. So you need to buy a photoelectric bottle, too. Photoelectric. Best at detecting smoky smoldering fires, photoelectric smoke detectors use an LED light beam inside the detector's inner chamber. When rising smoke particles interrupt or scatter the beam, the NFPA explains, it then triggers the alarm. In our test, photoelectric detectors such as the First Alert, though excellent at detecting smoldering fires, were poor at flaming fires, so pair them with an ionization model. Combination and smart. Some units, as the Nest model, detect carbon monoxide as well as smoke, saving you the step of buying additional CO monitors. The Nest is also smart, meaning it can send detection and low battery alerts to your phone. But you can also make your regular smoke alarm smarter by adding a smoke alarm listening device, such as the $100 Leo Smart Alert or the $70 KID Remote Link Monitor, which alerts you when the detectors go off. Or try the $35 Roost Smart Battery, which can be put inside any conventional detector that uses a 9-volt battery, to upgrade it with an internet connection and get alerts. The Smart Photoelectric Smoke Detector from Nest, second generation, is $120. And it gets both types of fires. The Dual Sensor First Alert is $40. It does flaming fires and smoldering fires. That's a dual sensor. The Photoelectric First Alert at $25 is not good for flaming fires, but it's good for smoldering fires. For ionization, the KID, KNCOSM, at $35 is the best scoring. December is the best time to buy cookware. Watch for great prices on sets of pots and pans this month. Laptops also. Who wouldn't love a shiny new laptop under the tree? Now's the time to score a great deal even on newer models. And coffee makers. 'Tis a season for deep discounts on brewing machines. How healthy is oil? The cooking section of grocery store has more and more options. Coconut, corn, hemp, olive, walnut, to name a few. And all have roughly 120 calories and 14 grams of fat per tablespoon. But the type of fat that makes these oils can vary dramatically. Both monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats make up the majority of the fats in most nuts, seed, and plant oils, and have been tied to a lowered risk of obesity, cardiovascular disease, and stroke. They're especially helpful when in place of unhealthy saturated fats found in significant amounts in butter and coconut oil. But the type of cooking you're planning matters too. High heat cooking requires oil with high smoke point and the temperature at which oil begins to burn. And for some dishes, you want a neutral or mild flavor, while others call for specific taste. While in mind, here are the five common oils to help you find the best fit. Avocado oil. Taste. Pressed from the fresh flesh of the seed, avocado oil has a mild, nuttery, and buttery flavor. Best uses for this oil is a high smoke point, which makes it a good fit for a variety of cooking methods such as sautéing and searing, but not for deep frying. If you find that olive oil is too strong a flavor for you, avocado is a good option with similar fat content. Canola oil. Taste. Made from the seed of the canola plant, a variety of rapeseed. It is a nutshell flavor, neutral flavor, similar to vegetable oil. Best uses. Try it in dishes where you want other flavors to stand out, such as baked goods or on a delicate fresh fish. It's good for medium to high heat cooking. Most canola oil comes from GMO plants. That's a concern, because organic or non-GMO verified oils. Olive oil. Taste. Olive oil can taste of fresh-cut grass, herbs, nuts, butter, or fruit. Some oils have a sharp, peppery bite or slight bitterness. Extra virgin bottles have the boldest flavor. Best uses. Though pricey, extra virgin is great as a dip or a salad dressing. Drizzle over bean, grain, or pasta dishes. Use virgin, light, and just a plain olive oil for sautéing vegetables or meat. Safflower oil. High oleic. Taste. Derived from the seeds of the safflower plant. The unrefined oils are a dark yellow orange and have a mild, nutty, earthy flavor. Refined oils are typically pale and more neutral in taste. Best uses. Its unassuming taste of high smoke point make it perfect for a variety of dishes and cooking, such as for baked goods, curries, and stir-fries, as well as sautéing and deep-frying. Coconut oil. Taste. Extracted from the flesh of coconuts, this topical oil has a mild, sweet coconut flavor. Refined versions of coconut oil have very high smoke points, so they're good for frying recipes or in Asian dishes such as curries. It's almost all hard, unhealthy saturated fat, though, so it's best to use it, this type of oil, in moderation. And let's cool out with a quick all in a day's work. I'm a nurse in a hospital's children ward. One night I was at the nurse's station when I heard a little boy in his room talking. He kept the patter up for some time. Finally, I got an intercom and said softly but firmly, "All right, Johnny, it's time to go to sleep now." There was quiet in the room, and then he said, "Okay, God, I will." I didn't hear a peep from him until morning. I was in a small store in a nearby town one evening. Wanting to find out when it opened the next morning, I stopped a teenage staffer on her way out and asked, "What are your hours?" Her reply, "Right now, 6 to 9, because I'm in school. But next month, it will be full time." Well, we've run out of time for today's broadcast of the Reader's Digest Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is tender people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. If you'd like to thank all of our past sponsors for their generous contributions to the reading service. If you have any comments or questions or would like to be a sponsor, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.